In America, our celebration of St. Patrick's Day usually means lots of green and Guinness, parades, and step dancing. But there's much more to the story than that. Philip Freeman is the author of a book called St. Patrick of Ireland, a biography. Freeman told Anne Strangechamps that the patron saint of Ireland has a surprisingly vivid life story, one that comes to life in the pages of his letters.
He's writing this to the British bishops who have called him back to Britain to answer some charges. And he says at the very beginning, "I am Patrick, a sinner, the most unsophisticated and unworthy among all the faithful of God. Indeed, to many, I am the most despised. My father was Calpurnius, a deacon of the church, and my grandfather was Potitus, a priest. His home was the village of Benevento Berniae, but he also had a country estate nearby. There I was captured when I was just short of my 16th birthday, at a time when I had no real knowledge of God. I was led away as a slave to Ireland, as were so many thousands of others."
Wow, he really does just jump off the page at you, doesn't he?
He does.
What was his life like after he was sold into slavery in Ireland? How would he have lived?
Well, he talks about his experience. He was then about 16 years old. He was sold into slavery. He was probably up in the northwest part of Ireland, in County Mayo, which is the coldest and wettest part of Ireland, even today. And Patrick says he spent most of his time as a shepherd, taking care of sheep, which was in Ireland, in ancient Ireland, was considered a very low-class job. It's something children and slaves did. So he spent some time with the family in their household, but he spent a lot of his time out in the hills, sleeping underneath a tarp or perhaps in a cave, watching and taking care of the sheep. And he says that it was just a miserable experience. And you have to imagine, here's a young man who was raised as a Roman nobleman, who had everything that he possibly could have wanted, and all of a sudden he is a slave in a horrid foreign land.
He says in that letter that he had been a young man of no great faith. How did he become Christian? Was there a conversion experience of some sort?
There really was. He had been raised as a Christian, but he says that he was an atheist from childhood. But I think anybody put into a very adverse situation like Patrick was starts to maybe rethink the rejection of their childhood religion, and that's what happened to him. He says that he became, over time, a very devout Christian and that he would pray 100 times during the day and again 100 times at night, and it was a true religious conversion.
Sounds like he became very devout, but was there any sort of mystical experience, any direct, you know, experience of the divine that he writes about?
Oh, there was. One of the things that Patrick talks about is that throughout his life, starting as a teenager in Ireland, he had a series of visions which came to him in dreams during the night. And his very first one told him that it was time for him to go back to Britain and that there was a ship waiting for him. But these experiences continued many, many times up until he was an old man. And he is a little reluctant to talk about this, especially to the British bishops, because he's afraid they're going to make fun of him and laugh at him. But I think it would be very fair to call St. Patrick a mystic.
So what about that one where he said it was time for him to go back to Britain? I mean, at the time, he's a slave in the hills in Ireland. What did he do?
Well, he had one dream at night which said, "It's time to go back." And he ignored that. He couldn't believe it. He thought it must just be some sort of strange something coming from his own psyche. But then he had very rapidly another vision during the night which told him exactly where to go and told him that his ship was ready. And he took that one seriously. And he headed out across Ireland. He says that he traveled about 200 Roman miles, which is about 180 modern miles. So he had to cross the whole length of Ireland, which it was certainly not an easy task at all.
And what happened when he got to the port city?
Well, he finally got to a boat, probably somewhere along the south coast of Ireland, and there were a group of merchants there. They were probably Irish themselves, and they were transporting goods to Britain, probably to Britain. It could have been to modern-day France, but best guess it was Britain. And he asked them if he could go with them, if he could work his way across the Irish Sea for a few days, helping with the cargo. And they just immediately said, "No way, get out of here. We don't want anything to do with you." So Patrick went a little ways off and he started to pray. And the men on the boat, the captain, had a change of heart. And he said, well, okay, you can come with us.
Did he have a prodigal son experience? You know, they killed the fatted calf and here he is back and he gets his noble robes back again and his personal slaves and life's good again?
Well, I'm sure it was for a while. It must have been a great party because no one ever escaped from Ireland. This was just unheard of for a slave to escape and make it back to Britain. So I'm sure he spent several weeks being feasted by all of his friends and family. And we don't know exactly how long he was there in his parents' household. But there, one night again, he had a vision. He had a series of visions. And these told him that it was time for him to go back to Ireland and to work and to bring Christianity to the Irish people.
This is not nearly as nice a vision as the first one that said it was time to go home. You'd think said, no, forget it.
Oh, he did at first. It took three visions this time for him to get going back to Ireland. These are people who had kidnapped him, who had killed his friends, who had treated him brutally in Ireland. And he was having this call from God to go back to this island and to work among these people. So I'm sure he was very hesitant at first. And we know his family just couldn't believe this. They were absolutely opposed. They thought that he had lost his mind.
What was Ireland like to work? I mean, he did go back to Ireland, and he began trying to convert people to Christianity. Were people amenable to Christianity at that time?
Well, Patrick says that he had a hard time, and he worked there for several decades, probably at least 30 years. When Patrick went to Ireland, there were already some Christians there. Patrick was not the first Christian to go to Ireland. He was not even the first bishop of Ireland. But he went probably to the north, and he found a number of small Christian communities. Many of these people who were Christians would have been slaves who, like Patrick, had been kidnapped from Britain. So he goes there and he works, and it was a very slow process. He worked getting to know the different tribal kings, and there were dozens of tribes in Ireland at the time. He had to get in good with them and get their permission to work in their particular area of control. And Patrick says it was a very difficult process, that he was regularly beaten and starved, and he was even taken into slavery for a brief time once again. And he says he's writing as an old man, probably in his 70s or 80s, and he says even then, after decades in Ireland, that he expected to be killed at any moment because it was a very difficult and dangerous situation.
I read in your book that Patrick himself said that his ministry appealed especially to women, and that women from all over Ireland would flock to him for conversion. Why?
Well, he concentrated, I think, on the women, and his message also appealed to them in a special way. Christianity, whatever else it is ultimately a religion of equality and kindness, and that appealed to the women. He had a great following among the slaves in Ireland. Many of them were Christians. Many of them converted to Christianity. But not just slaves. Patrick talks about the daughters of kings who were coming to him and becoming Christians and even becoming celibate nuns, which certainly did not please their parents at all. But Patrick writes again and again about his special concern for the women of Ireland.
You said the story that Patrick drove the snakes out of Ireland is actually just a myth?
Yes, it is.
So did he do any miracles? Because I thought you had to accomplish a few miracles to become a saint.
Well, that's a wonderful thing about Patrick. When you read the letters, the two letters which he wrote himself, there are no miracles. He is very much a human being, accomplishing what he did through hard work. The stories of miracles come along at least 200 years after Patrick, when the later followers of Patrick are trying to build him up as a saint, which they can be proud of and show off to the rest of Europe. But the story about the snakes especially is a very late story. The Romans, 200 years before Patrick, were writing that there were no snakes in Ireland. So Patrick, there were no snakes for him to drive out. It's a much later invention.
To do the research for this book, you must have spent a lot of time in Ireland. How is St. Patrick regarded by the Irish today?
Well, Patrick is celebrated, of course, as the patron saint of Ireland, not just by Catholics, but by Protestants in the north. If you go to Ireland and you go to the town of Armagh, you will see a great cathedral to St. Patrick, a great Catholic cathedral. But then practically next door, you will see a Protestant cathedral to Patrick. So he is somebody who is a hero to both sides of the religious divide in Ireland. Mm. But to be honest, St. Patrick's Day is a much bigger deal in the United States, in Boston, Chicago, New York, than it is in Ireland.
Are there any other stories we know, specific things he might have said, stories of encounters he had with specific people? I mean, we know the shape of his life and the events of it, but can we get anything more anecdotal, or is that just, you know, lost in time?
Well, one great story which we have from one of his own letters is written to a British king. This British king, when Patrick was an old man, he sent raiders over to Ireland to raid for slaves, and he took some of Patrick's recent converts captive and killed others. So Patrick writes back to this man, Caradocus, to this king, and he says, "You cannot do this to your fellow Christians." And the furor and anger in Patrick's voice comes through so clearly in this letter which he writes. You get the feeling, a very clear feeling, that although Patrick was a man of gentleness, that he could also be a man of great ferocity when necessary.
Do you have any of that letter? Is there any of that you could read?
Sure. Let me find it. Yes, this is from the start of Patrick's letter to the soldiers of Caradocus. "I don't like to use forceful words or harsh language, but I will do it because the anger of God and the truth of Christ force me to. I do it for the love of my neighbors here in Ireland and for my spiritual children. I have traded in my homeland, my family, and my very life for them, even if it means my death. With my own hands I write this letter, given to my messenger, carried on its way, and handed over to you, the soldiers of Caradocus. Notice I don't call you my fellow Romans. No, your crimes have made you citizens of hell."
Wow. Doesn't mince words, does he?
He doesn't at all, not when it comes to the Irish people who he worked so hard and so long with.
Thank you so much for talking today. That was wonderful. It's a piece of history I didn't know anything about.
It was my pleasure.
Philip Freeman is the author of St. Patrick of Ireland. He spoke with Anne Strangehamps.